Welcome to another episode of the End of Time podcast. My next guest is Jay Hess, a military veteran who served in the U.S. Army and U.S. Navy across a 17-year career. Jay has traveled the world while serving his country, rising to the rank of sergeant, specialized in the logistics side of the U.S. military. This episode explores the complexities regarding the military, race and ethnicity, cancel culture, and the negative perceptions the media continuously portrays. Jay currently lives in Wuhan, Thailand, and is eager to share his experiences. I've known Jay for around a year now, and I can truly say he has a unique perspective and a type of mindset which I've never previously encountered. And I hope, and I think you will, really, really enjoy this podcast. So, enjoy.
I should have worn that brown shirt.
Welcome back to another episode of the End of Time podcast, and we have a new location, new country, new person. I don't know who this guy is, I don't know how he popped up here, but but welcome.
Thank you. My name is Jay Hess. You can find me on Instagram at Cassio Culture.
Is that your actual Instagram name?
Yeah, it is actually.
Oh. Why?
I don't know. Why? I have to change it to something more meaningful, I guess.
More meaningful.
It's been like that for years, so... Yeah.
Well, we are in Wuhan right now.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. And yeah, this is actually my house. You can't really see it at this camera angle, or any camera angle right now anyway. But yes, so you've been living here for, is it 2 years now?
Yeah, so I've retired, semi-retired myself, and so I've been living here for about 2 years.
2 years.
And why Wuhan? It doesn't pop up in any map. Especially like Chaham or something. This whole area does not pop up.
Well, so, you know, when people think of Thailand, specifically Americans, mm-hmm. they have the whole hangover movie aspect of it. And so yeah. Hoa Hin is like the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. It's more comfortable. You can go and be crazy, and then there's the beach and the calm, the retired area. So mm-hmm. It's more comfortable for children. So
more comfortable for children.
Yeah. I have two kids here. I have two kids here. So
okay.
Yeah, I can't like live in Phuket and Pattaya near Walking Street trying to raise two kids, so.
No, that would not be, I mean, that would be an interesting childhood, but.
It would grow up way too fast, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, speaking of Pattaya, I just saw on the news that they banned like, well, there's also like the police do like their monthly walkthrough, yes, the Walking Street, the walkthrough to see that there's no prostitution, there's no illegal stuff going on there. So they had their monthly walkthrough, and they declared on the news that prostitution doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. Nothing illegal goes on Pattaya Walking Street.
It's to me, it sounds like they just reclassified it or something. Because to say it doesn't exist is a little...
It's a bit of a push.
Yes. Not that I've engaged in said activities, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to be clear that none of us have been engaged in that.
We don't condone in such activity.
No, never. Never. No. No. But what brought you to Thailand specifically?
So, initially when I first tried to retire myself, I got out of the Navy and I told my command, I was like, I'm gonna go to college in Thailand. And they laughed.
They laughed?
They laughed, yeah. Because like, that was something that no one had done in the service at that time. Mm-hmm. And they had this program where you can get out early and they'll pay for your school.
Sick.
And so I applied and I came here to Hoa Hin to Webster University, which was recently closed down.
But it was closed down?
Yes. Oh. But due to corruption.
Oh. That's the kind of thing you get at Thailand institutions. Bit of corruption there.
So it was, funds were being misplaced. But yeah, I came here for university. Mm-hmm. I had a little too much fun. I had two kids, and that's why I came back the second time, mm-hmm. to retire and live full time. But yeah, I've made so many friends that have become family, mm-hmm. And I even met you in that 10-12 year time period.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean it's become my second home. Yeah.
So you think your other like your first home is in the U.S. or what are you feeling at the moment?
No, this is more of a first home. Now that you bring that up, because I never want to go home. Like to go home, I have to like force myself, because it's more. I like live on vacation here.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, going into stress if when I'm going home, because the flights are expensive, that's living true. Expenses, renting a car. It's the complete opposite of how I'm living now. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't exactly ride your motorbike everywhere and park everywhere.
No, especially at the speeds that we were at. Especially after like a night out of drinking.
We don't remember. We don't condone this action.
We don't condone any of this.
No, you do you, but drink responsibly.
The things that you're able to do here and get away with are far more. They're far more casual than we are in the States. Yeah.
So what is it? I should bring Andrew Tate into it. He did say in one of his like little shorts I saw, he's like, Thailand's the only place where true freedom actually exists, where people can actually take advantage of the corruption.
Yeah.
Which is around. Everybody has access to the corruption,
yes.
Instead of just a minute few. That's what Andrew Tate say.
And that's what I respect the most about it. Because I don't consider it corruption. It's the way of life here.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use it to your. Everyone can use it to their advantage in one way or another. So, yeah. Whereas in America, you have to be the most wealthy person to make things disappear. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, we've all had our. I have had my fair share of encounters with the police.
Yes.
Them asking me how much I want to pay in a fine, which was very new. That was very new to me. Yeah. I asked the police. I got pulled over at a checkpoint, as you do.
Yes.
Something that happens to every foreigner once in a while in Thailand. And then I didn't have like my green book or something. Your my insurance book.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I paid the insurance. They didn't accept a photo. They were like, "No, I need the green book." I was like, "Okay, I don't have it, mate." He's like, "Okay, how much you want to pay in fine?" Not exactly in his accent. But then I was like, 100 baht. So he's just like hysterically laughing. And then he told his other, like the other police officers, and they started hysterically laughing. So they're all just laughing at me.
Yeah.
I'm just like, "Oh, 500 baht then? You know, should we increase a little bit?" He's like, okay, you can go now.
Yeah, I've had those encounters as well. But living here for quite some time, I know the routes to take. To avoid them, yes. Actually, the other day, me and her, we went to my girlfriend. We went to test.
She's off camera. She's off camera right now.
Camera.
Wave. The camera won't pick it up, boom. She waved, everybody.
So we went to Tesco, and I tell her every day, I'm like, "Hey, we can't go down to 88 after 12 o'clock because that's where the police set up."
Like at lunchtime? Or?
No, this is like midnight.
Oh, okay,
midnight.
Okay.
And so we go grab our groceries, and she goes down to 88. And I'm like, "All right, here we go." And lo and behold, there's a police setup. And she just keeps going on through, not realizing, "Oh, they're going to stop me for sure." And so they stop me. They're like, "Oh, you football player," which all of them ask. And I'm like, no. And they're like, did you drink today? And I'm like, "Oh, no, I didn't drink today." I'm speaking Thai to them.
Okay.
Which definitely helps.
Yeah.
Like in a long way. So I'm speaking Thai to them. And then she calls me, and so I'm trying to debate with them and speak with her. And I'm like telling her, like, "No, you don't have to come back." And she comes back, and then she starts talking Thai to them, and she gets me out of the situation to where I didn't have to pay, I didn't have to piss in a cup. So, yeah,
that's not ideal, pissing in a cup.
No,
it's not.
I don't want to pull my dick out. Yeah, in the middle of like, I'm just buying groceries. Like,
I'm doing my thing. I'm doing my daily life. You know.
It just feels.
You're buying rice. You're buying pork. I don't know.
I'm trying to organize lunch for tomorrow. Like, I don't want to have to think about. which is quite. It's uncomfortable to think about.
Yeah.
You could be pulled off to the side to piss in a cup,
mm-hmm.
and if you don't want to, they can have you pay some sort of fine. So,
yeah.
So down 88. So this is Hua Hin, so 88. Just for the viewers.
Yeah.
Is that normal? Then there's always a checkpoint. I've never seen one there.
On the weekend. So what they do is, they know where they call us Farangs, the foreigners. They know where the majority of us live,
mm-hmm.
and they'll set up down at the end of the soy where you have to go to get home. So.
You can't avoid it.
Yeah, there's no avoiding it. That's why I won't live in like Hin Lek Phai,
because
they always have the train station.
Yeah.
Or one of those back roads. They're just waiting for you to go home. So, yeah. Where I live in Khao Thakiap, the police station, they're never...
Oh, they're never there.
They're
man.
Never there. And so that has been very helpful.
Very helpful, yeah.
And my night and social life, so...
Oh, definitely. Oh, 100%.
So let's... You mentioned that you were in the Navy.
Yes.
We'll bring it back to the Navy.
Okay.
So, why did you get involved in the Navy?
Do you like to swim or? That's not a racial joke or anything, you know. Just
so, my older brother was in the Navy, mm-hmm. and I was at this construction job, and it had just become. I was in Indiana at this time. It was winter time. It was like below zero. Oh, shit. I was like, this is not comfortable at all. So I decided to venture off and try and join the military because I wanted to go to college, mm-hmm. and I didn't have the money to pay for it.
Okay.
And I was 17, and they were allowing us to join at 17. And my grandma took me, and I signed up and sent myself off to Japan.
So your first deployment was Japan?
Yeah. Well, it's not really a deployment. It was the first duty station.
Okay.
Yeah. Weirdly, I told my grandma, I was like, yeah, I wanna be stationed in Japan. I didn't think I was going to actually get it. And so when they showed me my flight ticket, I was like, wow, like I'm actually about to do this. My first duty station. And the first time leaving, to a major country outside of the U.S. So,
oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, it was quite the experience. Yeah. I was actually pretty scared.
You were scared of going to Japan?
Well, have
you
been? I've never been.
Like, to Asia.
Oh, my God.
And so, but I had to be tough because, like, yeah, my mom is crying and stuff. And I'm like, no, mom, it'll be all right.
I'll be fine.
I'm, like, comforting her. Mm-hmm. But I'm secretly scared but excited for the experience.
Yeah.
To say the least. So.
Where in Japan did you go? Was it Tokyo, Osaka, or?
So it was the countryside.
Okay.
I was at a place called Sasebo. Yeah.
So I'll put a map up here.
So they have two bases. They have three. There's one in Yokosuka.
Okay.
Which is near Tokyo. And then they have the Marine base in Okinawa. Mm-hmm. And then the Navy base is in Sasebo. Yeah.
And what were you doing there? Could you say? Is it classified, you know? Is the CIA, like, listening to us right now, or?
No, I'm not one of those guys. No, I was what's called an operations specialist.
Okay.
I started off as a radar. I worked with radars, seeing how far shipping and air contacts were. Mm-hmm. And then I became an air traffic controller. So.
You never told me this. What the? An air traffic controller? That's sick.
You never asked.
My bad.
And the bulk of my service time is now Army, so I don't really think about to bring it up anymore. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long did you stay in the Navy?
So Navy was 10 years. Army was 7 years.
7 years.
Yeah. But the Army was more stressful, so that 7 years felt like 14 years.
What were you doing in the Army? Something similar to, like, radar?
Actually, no. I wanted to. Mm-hmm. You know, you would think it would make sense to them to put me in a similar field.
You already had those skills there.
I already had the certifications for, like, air traffic control and stuff. But no, they gave me logistics.
They gave you logistics?
Logistics. Ah. Yeah.
I mean, my dad, he's also off camera there. He's in logistics.
He's in logistics as well.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know. I think you told me this before.
Okay, yeah. Wow. So you're moving, like, ammo around?
Yes. Ammo, food, just like, you know, on the battlefield, wherever they're located. I have to pick a point as to not give away their location.
Okay.
So where I can safely give them their ammunition, food, and, you know, whatever else they may need. So.
Yeah. Were you bringing stuff to, like, Afghanistan, Iraq, that kind of stuff, or?
No, I made sure to avoid going on the difficult deployments.
Fair enough. That's
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So. Just the normal training areas in California, stuff like that.
Yeah. And for the, so 7 years in the Army.
Yes.
So that was hell.
It was so, like, it was kind of hell for me because I was prior service. Mm-hmm. And you would think it would be brotherly love that I was Navy and now I'm about to be Army. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
They hated it. They were like,
they hated it.
Yeah. Even in, like, boot camp, because I kept my rank.
So what was your rank?
I was a sergeant.
You were a sergeant?
Yes. An NCO, which is unusual to be in boot camp.
Because
they can't really punish me because I'm the same rank as them. But they would just talk shit to me. They call me like a squid or...
Squid? That's a weird insult.
It is. I didn't understand it either. But
still to this day.
Yeah. But, like, they hated the fact that I was fire service. And that kind of bothered me a little bit.
That is weird. You would expect... I mean, you guys are in the same... You're serving the same country, right?
Yeah. I mean, there were a few that... were super cool, but the bulk of them hated my guts, so yeah. But it was pretty fun during graduation.
Why? What happened in graduation?
Because I was able to wear my warfare pants, all my shit. So, like, It was my, like, fuck you to them, you know? Like, that was pretty fun.
Because they were all, like, privates, the low, like, the starting at the bottom in the army, or...
The people that I'm in class with, they're, like, privates, you know, E1s, E2s. I was E6, and they bumped me down to E5, because you can't be E6 going to boot camp, I guess. I don't know the rules as it pertains to that, but, yeah, it was a lot of hate for being an NCO there. So here, and this is what I found out after I graduated. They actually weren't allowed to punish me.
Oh, they weren't?
No, but they would tell the group, and so I would just do it. And so they couldn't order me specifically, but since I didn't know that I didn't have to do it, I'm just knocking out these push-ups. And then they told me at the end, hey, you didn't have to do that. Oh. Just like, what the
You could have said something a bit earlier, you know?
But I was in the best shape of my life. I lost like 10, 15 pounds.
Just from the boot camp?
Oh, yeah. Well, cause, and then they hated me, so.
They give you extra.
It was
extra
like, hey, Sarn, keep on going. And I actually needed it, because after that training, so in the Navy, I was called enlisted. Mm-hmm. Like, you're E1 to E9. In the Army, I was an officer, so yeah. I became a first lieutenant. And so them bullying me, well, I wouldn't call it bullying. You know, they were just setting me straight, showing me the Army way. Mm-hmm. It definitely prepared me to become an officer, for sure.
Do you think, what did you learn most from being your time in the Army or in the, yeah, let's start with the Army first. What did you learn the most?
They don't tell you, they don't give you the instructions. Like, they give you the mission, they give you little to no instructions.
Okay.
And as difficult as that sounds, it's super difficult to adjust to, especially from the Navy. They give you all the instructions you need to be successful in your mission. Mm-hmm. In the Army, however, you have to find your own way. We have this way, it's called FITFO, FITFO, okay. And it stands for figure it the fuck out.
Oh, that's an actual, like...
Yeah, it's something that we actually use, and it actually helps you so much in life, because, like, it doesn't matter what I can't figure out here. Mm-hmm. Or, like, if I can't find the answer from someone, I will figure it out.
Yeah.
Because it gives you that motivation and that resilience to just go and fix
it.
Just do it yourself. Because you're in such stressful situations. Like my first mission, delivering food and ordnance, I had never been to this training area.
Yeah.
And they're like, they just gave me a map. And they're like, they're like, figure out which coordinates you want to deliver your first, you know, drop off to. Mm-hmm. And so I'm talking with my platoon sergeants.
Yeah.
I'm talking with my commander. Like, they're giving me little to, because they want you to see how you react under pressure, essentially.
Yeah. That's what that's a key part of the military, right? Stress and dealing with the stress.
You do, especially when you deploy, it's going to be in a very high pressure zone. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, I was successful with it, but I was stressing my ass off.
I mean, fair enough. Like, yeah. you're in the hot seat. You're literally in the hot seat.
And then the added pressure is your soldiers are watching you plan and conduct your mission planning and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing my mission brief. And, like, I'm freaking out on the inside because I can't show them. Because they won't have confidence in my leadership if they see me stressing out. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So is this, like... I mean, it sounds, I don't want to say toxic, but it sounds like everybody is out to get each other, and to some extent.
It's a way of training. I won't say it's the best, but I could tell you that I learned the most from that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was very hard and very stressful at times, and I fucking hated it. But I learned the most from that specific strategy.
Yeah. What would you, if you were in charge, if you were making the new guidelines and stuff, what would you change then? I mean, I'm putting you on the spot, I know.
I would probably change the order in which you deliver training. Like, I would move a lot of that stuff to boot camp.
Learn it on the job.
Learn it on the job. Because learning it on the job, to me, that's more dangerous, because your leadership is being tested in front of your platoon. And as officers, we are required to conduct ourselves on a higher, more professional level. Mm-hmm. And so to put that leadership exposure at risk in front of your platoon, mm-hmm. it can be toxic in a way, mm-hmm. because it's your platoon getting to learn you as a person.
Yeah.
And so if you fuck that up, essentially that's your welcome to your platoon.
I mean, and then they can just do whatever the fuck they want. They can walk over you.
They don't really respect you if you fuck up that mission. Mm-hmm. because they don't have that confidence. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so. If you fuck up super bad, then that's that's on you.
Yeah. So it's a lot of it is about confidence.
Yes. Yeah. But the way that they teach you, it instills confidence within yourself. Because like it's important for your commanders and your command to be confident in you to complete these missions. But self confidence is more important because like you're in charge of people's lives, like soldiers that have moms and dads and wives and children. So of course you need to conduct yourself and be under pressure, but they need to be confident in you as well. So it's a two-way street when it comes to that. Because like you need to show confidence under pressure, and they need to trust that you can make the right decision under pressure too. So
I see.
Yeah.
Damn. And that was 7 years of that.
Yeah,
fuck. God damn. The pressure I'm getting right now is the camera angle the podcast is, right? You know?
Yeah. I think the thing I hated the most about the Army was the PT was mandatory. Whereas in the Navy, if you were out of shape, you had to go to mandatory PT.
Oh.
And so we were allowed to just kind of do what we wanted to do to keep ourselves in shape. In the Army, everybody does the same thing. We all have to get up and run. We have to do the same stretch. Everything was
it was a regiment and
like, yeah. Just, like, kind of schedule. I hated that. Mm-hmm. I understood it, but I hated it.
Yeah. Damn. And now you left that life behind, and now you're here.
Now I'm here. But and the crazy thing is, I still wake up at 6:30 in the morning.
Every day.
Every day.
No matter if there's been a drinking session the night before.
It's not matter. No. But like I still have that regiment, and it's so helpful. Because like even when I'm hungover, I'm like, nope, I still have to do something productive throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I still go to the gym every day. Good. Yeah, gotta stay healthy. Gotta stay looking good out here.
You know? I mean, I was just at the gym just before I filmed this podcast.
Oh. Awesome. Because it's living here can be so. It's so easy to get in that loop of going out every day.
Yeah.
Because it's so cheap.
Mm-hmm. A beer. It's like not even going out. You know.
A 40 ounce is like $2. And like, it's so cheap to have $2 40s and you're drinking 6 to 8 of them every day. you can like get used to that because it's just such a fun and easy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's dangerous as well because over time, you start to gain weight.
Yeah.
You're not as productive throughout the day.
And you start, you start getting into a pattern, you start meeting people you'd probably in the past like you probably wouldn't in a negative way to some extent.
The people that you're meeting in these areas are not good people. So for sure, because like I stopped drinking for like a week and a half because I started to have some health issues.
Mm-hmm.
I was just making sure it wasn't related to drinking or whatever, and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going out sober and I'm playing pool and I'm like, hearing these people have these conversations that I would normally get drunk and have conversations with, and I'm like, these people are horrible. Like, just hearing the topics that they speak on, it's like, this is what I come to do every day. And so I started to see myself in a different light because I was going out sober.
It's weird going out sober. It's really weird.
I mean, like, people come and talk to you, and they're like in your face, and you smell all the alcohol they've consumed. like that Kevin guy from last night. The DJ guy.
Oh, okay.
The half tie I have. Mm-hmm. He like took some shot of tequila and like he came to explain this story.
Yeah.
And all the stuff he was using had H's in it. So he's like, hi, how was your day? And like all his breath. And you just smell it. And it's just like, that was probably me when I would be, drunk going and talk to these people. So, I kind of exposed myself to myself.
I mean, it's tough to do this kind of stuff, and just to take a break from what you normally used to get out of your comfort zone to some extent, and then put yourself in a situation where everybody else is fucked, and you're just like, yo, what are they doing, That is the end of part one of the End of Time podcast episode with Jay Hess. Part two focuses more on race and ethnicity and the media's influence in today's society. Where do you think your politics has gone? I mean, we were talking about cancel culture for a little bit, but and we mentioned off camera, all the best conversations happen. But you were talking about how race is always brought into every single discussion you have in America, good or bad. I mean, the humor is all race based, which is kind of funny, but everything else is also entrenched in it.
It is. It is actually. It's good and bad. like it's good to know where you stand. So, like, it's a very blatant.
Yes, it is.
With how they describe certain things, like if a cop kills anybody, it's cop kills black guy.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like they don't. You're not addressing the race of the cop. You're just saying cop. It's essentially a ploy to get you triggered. It's like race baiting, essentially.
Race baiting.
Yeah, because of how they're describing the incident. Yeah, and so. In that aspect, I don't like when they do it. But then there are some comedians that are perfectly.
Yeah, they're doing some spot. I think Dave Chappelle is pretty good with sort of some of the race stuff. And Kevin Hart. I love Kevin Hart. He said something about like black babies, like the black baby names. Yes. He was like, "Oh, it's just some random like somebody, some grandmother was eating cereal, and they're like, ah, that's my baby name or something silly like that." Yes. There's some really good.
Some comedians have mastered the art of talking about uncomfortable things without you realizing it, because you're laughing and you're having a good time.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's the wonderful thing about great comedians like Dave Chappelle and Kevin Hart. So, yeah, you're comfortable while they're talking about the most insane racial topics. Mm-hmm. But
it isn't directly related. He's not American, but Ricky Gervais has mastered this as well. When he's at the Golden Globes, like, like talking shit to all the celebrities there.
That's forever a classic to me because he exposed Hollywood in a way that was necessary, and the timing of it,
yes,
it was just perfect. The room was so chill and uncomfortable, which is what it should have been. Because he doesn't have a vested interest in America like
no, he doesn't.
The other people.
He's
so
British.
Fuck. He doesn't have to. And so it was brilliant.
It was brilliant. Because I think
one of my all-time favorite sets, for sure.
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
Because I think one of my favorite bits from that whole section was when Ricky Gervais started talking about Apple. He's like, because Tim Cook was in the audience, like the CEO of Apple. He was like, Apple with a new morning show, like it's doing great. And then they put the camera right onto Tim Cook, which is great. And then right after, Ricky Gervais says, yeah, they had sweatshops in China and, like, abuse people.
His punchlines are, like, you don't expect them to be so dark. But he makes them funny and dark, more funny than dark. Mm-hmm. And so it's just brilliant. It's just, I love it.
So I've noticed that in the U- and I think this is also a U.S. problem, but in the U.K., having comedians on campus is very, very controversial. That it may not even happen for most. Like, mainstream comedians have it very, very difficult to try and get even a gig on campus now. Because of... My university is notoriously known for its very left-wing stance and communist... We have a very active communist society on campus. Yeah. Shout out.
These last 10 to 15 years, being able to debate anything has become difficult because of the emotional connection to certain topics. And I think comedians are brilliant in that respect because they don't have a vested interest in anything they're talking about most of the time.
Yeah.
And so they're able to get people to have these conversations in a manner that it's very formal. Mm-hmm. No one's arguing or fighting. Everyone's laughing.
Yeah.
And so it's comedic brilliance and that you're able to do that in a room full of people that sometimes hate each other. Yes.
And I think it all goes to where the idea of the comedian came from, right? Is the jester, the only one allowed to make fun of the king and the queen in front of everybody. So I think making sure that we don't lose comedians, I think that's when our society will go. We'll become China then.
Yeah. When you can't make... you can make a joke out of pretty much anything. And in America, they literally do that. Like, it can be anything. It doesn't matter what it is, who it is. They will find a way to make a joke about it. So, yeah. But I think that's important, as you just stated, in society, that to be able to laugh at certain things and certain people when we want to.
Yeah, when we want to. Yes. Do you think... So there is hope, right? It's not all going to shit.
No.
Not all the time.
No, I think it's a perspective they want us to share. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anything is going to shit. It appears as though it is.
Oh, it does. The media does a really good job of it.
Yeah, they do a really good job of shifting the focus on what's important. Like, look how quickly we stopped talking about COVID. It's not even on the radar.
It's gone. It's completely gone. It was every single day.
dude, like 2 years ago, we were fucking spitting at each other. Why? Put your mask on.
Yeah.
A war against the vaccinated, unvaccinated. Now it's just not even talked about.
No. We don't care if you're vaccinated.
Yeah, no, of course.
Are you vaccinated?
I am not vaccinated.
No, really?
No, my sperm is worth millions. It's worth millions.
I want to state again, we're not doctors. We know nothing.
I'm not a doctor.
No, not a doctor. Cookie, what are you doing? Sorry.
No, she's fine. She's fine. This chocolate, bro.
It's a guy. You just misgendered the dog, bro. The mob is coming after you.
I don't know if they are. I'm going to get canceled before I even start. Okay, Cookie. Okay, I'm trying to focus. There we go. Then what was the question again? I got lost in Cookie.
It's not all going to shit.
No, I don't think so. I think they want us to, because the media, the way that they swing things, you can definitely tell that there's an agenda, even by the verbiage of the news. And then it's all negative.
Yeah.
Like a lot of great things happen in the world.
Yeah.
It never gets talked about. And so, and that's why I shy away from mainstream media as a news outlet, because it'll have you depressed.
Yeah.
Drinking and smoking every fucking day. So, no, I know how to research my own news and keep myself updated in my own way. So,
and it's also not like you don't, like if something, you know, Russia's going on, you know, the Russia, yeah, Ukraine, you know what's going on.
Yeah. I mean,
you still read them as well. You just don't trust them to the full extent, I would say.
Of course. Anytime, you don't want to become dependent on anything outside of yourself and your family. Anytime you're dependent on something, then that's a red flag, because especially if you depend on someone for your news.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't know where they're getting it. Like, because back in the day when news outlets would talk about something, and if it was like a specific topic, they had to give their sources.
Yeah.
Dr. So-and-so, Dr. So-and-so. Mm-hmm. Now they can just get away with, according to our experts. Like, no.
Who the fuck are these experts?
And not only that, who deemed them as experts?
Like,
we used to have that option to debate whether or not this person was viable with the stuff that they're talking about. So.
And you used to be able to, like, when these experts would talk and give their opinion, you could challenge them on it.
Yes.
You could, just because you're not, like, you don't have the same academic standing and stuff, but you can still read. You can still try and understand what he's trying to say and challenge him on that. Yeah. Challenge him or her.
I don't think the world is at all the way that it's being talked about in the news. No, it's a wonderful place. Very beautiful place. I've met some awesome people. And most of the people that, because to me, like, we say experience is the best teacher, right? In my whole life, I haven't met that many criminals. Like, and I've met thousands. Hundreds of thousands of people. And I've never met that many bad people. But it's like, if people are so paranoid because of what they believe and see in the news. And so your enemy, or the people that you're fearful of, you get taught from your media. So if you don't educate yourself on how to choose or know how to educate yourself on the current events, then you're kind of fucked.
You are kind of fucked.
Because your perspective, because you're living through someone else's perspective too.
And you're not living through, you're not trying to experience what you are actually experiencing.
You're in PC mode at that
point. You are a non-player character.
And to me, that's so dangerous, because now you're depending on someone else's research and perspective while you're living your own life. That's like taking someone else's story mode in their video game. Placing, like, no, don't do that. No, that's cheating. And so I choose to do my own research sometimes. I mean, and that comes with its bad parts as well. Sometimes you find some shitty research and it's not, honest and true. So, yeah.
But I think we've seen during the COVID campaign, you saw that the big backlash against Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
In terms of the mainstream media saying, oh, he's a COVID denier, even though he advocates, he advocates exercise, good nutrition, taking multivitamins every day, doing exercise every day.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, he didn't say anything about not taking the vaccine. He didn't say anything about that.
No, of course not.
He's just, do your own research. And apparently that was bad.
It's against their, anytime something is against their narrative, if something fixes the problems that they want you to be fearful of, they don't want to talk about that.
No. They need your problems to exist.
Yeah, problem, like a problem, solution, reaction, or whatever. Mm. Yeah. And so That's why I shy away from even venturing into, you know, your BBC, CBS, all that shit.
I mean, I have a very, very, a big opinion about the BBC. I think they are one of the best news source organizations on the planet. I can't watch American news. I can't watch it. I can't watch it.
America has sort of become this experiment.
Like, I mean, it's always been sort of an experiment, right? It's it's something that's never been done on, like, always the first democracy. They always talk about it.
Even all of America's problems, the solution is in your face, essentially. Because what these people are doing, it's legal. So you marching isn't going to change shit. You have to figure out what law that needs to be changed in order for this to not happen again. No laws are being changed at all. Like, people are being punished, or they're paying fines. Essentially, what that says is, you pay us $2 million, just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Mm-hmm. How come no one is flipping out about this shit? Like, mm-hmm. The shit they did was legal. That's the issue.
Yeah.
To me, law is the first place, and when there's a political issue, whatever the fuck it is, law is the first place you need to check. Because if people aren't getting arrested, it's because it was legal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I think what I'm getting at from that description is that you actually trust the American justice system to some extent. That if a law was broken, or a law wasn't broken, the police or the FBI or law enforcement in general will act.
It's the only level at which you make change. Yeah, like marching doesn't do it. What the fuck does marching do?
It sends a message. It's symbolic, right?
Okay, so say it sends a message. Mm-hmm. What if mainstream media doesn't want to publish your message? Like, sure, you may reach a few 100,000 people, but if they don't want to put your shit on there,
on their news,
because we used to have 50 media companies,
mm-hmm.
and now there's like six or seven major ones.
CBS, PBS.
So to go from 50 to less than 10 major networks, mm-hmm. that's pretty alarming, because it just shows that the news is now, the media is now controlled by a few instead of many. Mm-hmm. And so the amount of perspectives have drastically decreased.
Yes, I see.
And I think that's important to note. Yeah.
And I think, what is it? It's either the FEC or the SEC, the one that regulates like monopolies and stuff in America. It's one of the ECs. But they have.
but they changed the laws in order for them to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the exact verbiage or which law was changed, but
yeah.
Monopolies became legal because of mergers. I think there was a merger that happened.
Yeah.
Or hostile takeover, something.
Something like that. And I think it also with the bringing it back to COVID as well, because the media doesn't talk about it anymore. Like, to put the pharmaceutical companies on such a pedestal and like, wow, they're the epitome of the best kind of corporations and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, bro, look into them. Pfizer paid out $6-7 billion in fines, the biggest fine ever, for some very, very dodgy stuff.
But it's like, here's the issue that people need to focus on, like back to the whole law thing. How you stand in law is how you are either crucified or held as a hero in the media. And what I mean by that is, like, when Pfizer pays $2 billion, no names are, it's Pfizer, because of how they have their companies set up. Well, it's a corporation.
Yeah.
And so no one gets thrown under the bus. It's just the name Pfizer. That's all you get. And
so you think we need more names instead of, we should be holding the individuals accountable more than the actual corporation.
Yeah. I mean, they know what the fuck they're doing. They're not idiots.
They've been making billions for a long, long time.
I mean, even the patents on some of these, like, there's, it's so deep. The rabbit hole goes so deep.
It does.
You can look who owns the patents. The company that made the vaccinations, it wasn't even Pfizer or Moderna. They just put their stamp on it to approve it.
They like subcontracted somebody else.
It was contractors, and
it was funded by taxpayers.
Dude,
funded by taxpayers.
Yes, and all this was through legal loopholes, mm-hmm. and so the law needs to be changed in order to protect the citizens of America, or protect the country itself. Well, actually, America is actually not a country itself. It's a corporation too. That needs to be noted.
I think it is. It's definitely, when you compare it to Europe or some of the Scandinavian countries, how democracy there runs, it definitely seems like America is a corporation first.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, United States is a corporation. You can look this up.
What do you mean?
The United States, it's a corporation. It's not a country.
I mean, it's legally a country. You have the Constitution, all that states that it's a country.
No.
What do you mean?
So think about this. The United States of America, if you're of something, you're not the actual entity.
Well, because America is founded based upon oil with 50 states or 51 states or whatever it is.
Yes.
They form what the country is.
So
it's a federalist system.
Yeah. So like North and South America used to be known as the Americas.
Yes.
The Americas.
Mm-hmm.
So the United States, that's a completely different.
Yeah, because they all these little states used to be their own country. They used to be their own country.
Oh, well they used to be owned by the
colonial powers.
Yeah, okay. And then before that, there were the tribes had their own
way of doing
things. Yeah, their own way of doing things, and there were no lines.
Yeah, there were no lines. The lines are completely man-made.
Yeah. I mean, it's all legalese. I mean, because I ask a lot of Americans this question, and they get dumbfounded. It's North America and South America. Why aren't the people in South America called? Why aren't they Americans? They're in.
Yeah, they're still Americans, right?
South America.
Yeah.
And it just shows you how legalese can change your, and change the narrative of your perspective.
What's legalese?
Legalese is, like, for example, the definition of a person, the definition of a citizen, the definition of a child. The law version is what you should follow.
Yes.
Not what's taught in school. Because
you would think they would be you would think they would teach the one that's
so.
You would think they taught.
You would think so, but education is for sale. Nothing, because you know how we all say nothing life is free.
Yeah.
Education isn't either. So, especially in public schools, if you're counting on this school to give your kid any valuable education, no, you're wrong.
Is that because of like underfunding or lack of? I mean, teachers in public education in America, from what I've heard, are severely underfunded, underpaid, underappreciated, overworked.
From the perspective of Americans believing that they're in the greatest country, right? Everything. Then you have to see everything is intentional. Like nothing happens by accident.
No,
there is no underfunding. No, a decision was made to not fund it. Underfunding means it gives off the impression that, oh, we haven't been paying enough taxes, or like it takes the blame off of the person.
Yeah,
it's not underfunded. No, a decision was made by a judge to change the course, or a politician to change the course of funding. So, no.
That's interesting. I mean, yeah, it is a government decision not to put more money into the military, not to call out your military. Yeah. You know? You call out to invest in military more than education, or into infrastructure and all that. So it is government decisions, but it seems like you said earlier that there is hope. There is something you can change. It doesn't get the sense of that with legalese and all this.
Okay, so it's important for me to tell you why I think there's hope. Perspective is definitely key. If you notice, it's very important in America. I don't know if you feel the same thing, but when I'm in America, I feel like my attention is being fought for everywhere I go, whether it's through media, politics, whatever. There's a fight. Where here, I feel free. No one's fighting for my attention or anything. You know what I mean?
You're just being you. You're just relaxing. So
this is just my perspective on the matter. They want to control how people think and feel, because then you're controlling the global manifestation on a grand scale. Because if they control how you view the world, then they can control what you're manifesting.
And then, then after having that mindset, what do you plan to do?
Exactly.
And the actions you take and decisions you make is all based upon another, okay.
Yeah, and so you can control and sway the general populace based on what you portray this or this in the media. And then that's how they feel about it.
So
you can change how someone feels about something.
So it's like, to some extent, free will has gone away. There is no such thing as free will.
It hasn't. You can't really say it's gone away because it's in your face.
Yes. I mean, it's there.
You see it. So it's like, that's one thing they have to do. And I'll say they. No, I won't tell you who. Because that's a rabbit hole. But I mean, like, they have to control how you think and feel about something. That's why, like, it's illegal to take your kids out of public school or take your kids out of any school in America.
And not to put them into another.
It's like, because it's indoctrination. Because they're essentially teaching the populace how to obey. And then,
and do you see education as a way of the government, a governmental tool to indoctrinate people?
That and religion, they're part and parcel, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, religion can be seen, and throughout the generations has been proven. I mean, the Catholic Church, you take it, yes. they are known for their dubious. I'm not defaming anybody, but you guys don't help yourselves. Yeah. A bit dubious.
Because I think it's so. I don't know, man. I get so frustrated that people don't see that you control your life perspective, right? And so, but people allow a new story will break out, and then their whole demeanor changes. They're not happy anymore because, and this media is depressing you.
Yes. Oh, it is.
Because it's only talking about negative things. And so, when you think about the human body, like when something that's traumatic is talked about, your body is reacting to it.
It produces a physiological reaction. Yeah.
And it's negative to you. Mm-hmm. And so if you're constantly giving yourself these and you become addicted to it, essentially.
Yeah.
And so it puts you in a state of just negative outlook.
It's always a state of fight
fear.
Or flight.
Yeah.
Fear. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's.
That's the kind of feeling I get whenever I'm looking at Twitter and I'm looking through comments. I'm just like, fucking hell. What is wrong with people?
You can just see, and people are they're easily persuaded. Mm. Like even on when you're scrolling through Instagram, TikTok, whatever, someone will come out with an idea, and everyone just copies. Yeah. They'll even
going viral,
and it's like people are making videos for the entertainment of other people. Mm-hmm. So essentially, your life has become a play. You're not actually living anymore.
And that's when I see. I mean, I'm guilty of this. I think everybody's a little bit guilty of this. When you're on a night out or you're on a hike or anything, you get out your phone, you start recording.
Yeah.
You're not actually living in the moment then, are you?
You're not.
You are recording the moment so you can look back at it before, and you're still not in the moment when you look back.
We're the only species that does that.
We're the only species that was ever, evolved to this kind of extent. And there's a lot of challenges that come with it. We're still...
Yeah.
Understanding and trying to understand where the hell we are.
A lot of it is ignorance based too, because the music videos and Beyonce singing about oh, I'm a single lady, that's not her lifestyle though, she's actually married and has kids. But people allow themselves to be easily persuaded by the media and the music. I mean, it's
so what can people do to combat this?
Take responsibility for your own actions. Right. I don't blame anyone for if I'm drinking too much or I need to change or if I'm being lazy, I need to go to the gym. My health is degrading.
Yeah.
I take responsibility for everything. Nothing is influencing me to the level to which I can't take responsibility for my own shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so eventually people are going to have to take responsibility for their own things. Okay, if you ask someone now, why is this this way? They have a corporation to blame it on, or they have. Oh, it is what it is. Like some people, they use these sayings to get themselves throughout the day.
They deflect and take, they don't take responsibility.
Like you can have as many quotes in your fucking room as you want. Mm-hmm. If you're not taking action, you're not doing anything. Nothing is being changed.
I just came up with this analogy. If you can, it's a silly one, but you can have as many coat hangers in your house as you want.
Yes.
But if you don't put the coat on the coat hanger, the hanger is useless.
I mean, it's very technical, but
hey, it was on the fly.
But my biggest thing as of late is my perspective, right? And I don't allow anyone to influence how I feel about myself, because that's your what makes you. Go and do things. That's what gives you the energy to go and action the plans that you set out to achieve. And so I make sure the media that I'm surrounded by is motivational.
It's positive.
It's keeping with my masculine energy. Mm-hmm. And it's positive. Dude, because there's so much, human brain is so powerful. Mm-hmm. If a song can be playing over there while we're doing this podcast, your brain is so powerful. It picks up what's being said.
It kind of adapts to the vibe to some extent, the energy that music is expressing.
Yeah, because the human body is predominantly water, and water can store memory. And so all these things are sound waves that are influencing you whether you like it or not because of the material your body's made of.
So it's the kind of idea, if you put on sad music all the time, you're going to get sad.
So I'll put it this way.
You don't play fucking techno music when you're trying to fuck. Like you put lovemaking music because it puts your body, mind, and soul
into that mood.
Mm-hmm. And so it shows you how influential our whole body is to sound, to noise, to your environment. Like when the wrong song is played in the club, everyone's like, "Yo, what the fuck?" with the perspective that you want to have at that moment.
And it's not keeping with the energy that you've built up upon because of the previous music.
Exactly. Like no one wants to, when we're at the weed shop playing pool, someone walks up, "Hey, you got a minute for the good Lord Jesus Christ?" Like, at that time, I don't. Like,
I'm playing pool, you know, I'm having a drink.
there's a time and a place for everything. Especially vibes. To me, vibes are so important. You know, like a vibe can be even the manner in which I'm talking to you. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm like, "Dude, I'm happy as fuck." Like,
"I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I will make you happy."
And to me, a person's demeanor is the telltale. You can see everything that's wrong with the person
just by looking at them.
Just by looking at them, how they're expressing themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And whether or not you would want to be around them is exactly by that.
I'm like, living here in these past 2 years, the biggest thing I've gained is living truthfully. And what I mean by that is, if I'm upset, be upset until you're not upset anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, be moody. But like, be honest with other people about it too. Yeah. "Hey, sorry, man, I'm in a bad mood today." Like, take responsibility for it.
don't hide it, right?
Don't hide it. Yeah, because then like you're living a lie at that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's not good for, it's not good for anybody.
It's not. Because like self-expression is part of the healing process. I need to express them, allow myself to express it, especially to my friends. They need to know, "Hey, I'm not okay."
Yeah.
Because if they're truly your friends, they're going to help you get through it. So mm-hmm. Yeah, self-expression is definitely almost non-existent in society now. Everyone's afraid to offend.
Yeah, exactly.
Or everyone wants to show you that they're living the best lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. When in fact, like an Instagram post may show one thing.
Yeah.
In reality, you're doing something else.
Just like people will spend hours for that perfect Instagram video or post. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, you could have been productive in so many other ways.
I think that reminds me of a quote that Jordan Peterson. You have you heard of him?
Yes.
He's a very, very competent man, yes. Very, very intelligent.
Yes. And he's under attack right now.
He is. Yes. I mean, he's always under attack.
He promotes masculinity the right way.
I think he was talking about, I mean, he's gone through hell. This guy, he's gone through medical, he was in a coma for like 2 weeks or something. He's gone through hell because of his medical condition. But one thing that really struck with me when it really made me rethink a lot of my relationships was, how do you know somebody's your friend? Is that, yes, they'll be there for you when you're sad.
Yeah.
But then when you're happy, they'll help you be happier.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. Because I see in so many friendships, if I'm like, "Hey, like let's go out and get drunk. Let's go." "Oh yeah, like everybody's into it."
Yeah.
I'm like, "Hey, look, everybody, let's grab 5,000 baht. Let's invest in this business deal." That's what friends should do. You know what I mean? Let's have meetings to better each other.
Yeah, better each other. I think that's crucial and that's not talked about enough.
Like, going to get drunk is not something that betters you.
Like, no.
it could be used as a tool to relieve stress.
Yeah.
I've partook.
I think we've all part of
stupors.
We've all done some stupid shit when we're drunk, but I think we all need that balance. I think that's the key. That balance of having fun, getting rid of that stress, and also confronting and dealing with that stress. Yes. You need to do, and you need to use that stress.
Specifically the military, the veteran Americans. I love how we hold each other accountable. Like when you're doing something stupid, they call you out on it. They may use the most colorful language, but it's straight to the point. And by the way, I condone colorful language because it's honesty. You know what I mean? Like if I can tell you, "Hey man, I'm not having a good day." That's different from saying, "Yo, I'm having a shitty day." Because when I say it like that, like, "Oh shit, he's not having the best of days." Like you,
he's not like normal, you know?
Yeah, and you know exactly how I feel in that moment. So, yeah.
And then you know how to comfort or like improve that mood.
Exactly. Yeah.
Goddamn. I think this is the perfect time to leave it there.
Okay.
I think we'll leave it there. I think we've had, this has been it's gone everywhere, this conversation.
It has.
But I think we've gone in really deep and really, I think, expressed clearly what we need, what people need to do, like, yes, to improve their lives. Be happy. Surround yourself with positive energy.
Exactly.
And
surround yourself with people that want better for you than you do for yourself.
Here, here. Here, here. Here, here to that. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that this episode of the End of Time podcast. Thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it too.
Thanks. It's been a long time coming. Yeah. We've been trying to get this done for 6 months now, and just timing and schedules just did not line up. So, like, yeah, it's been a pleasure.